Kelnick. A great way to end things down at the Dome against the Rockies for the Jays. A 5-0 win. Despite a not-so-great start to the series, two straight wins against a team you should, you know, quote-unquote, beat, capped off by Jose Berríos allowing no runs over 7 innings of work. Great stuff by the Blue Jays down here at the Rogers Center.
Yeah, and you don't want to zoom in too much on any individual game in a 162, but this felt like a strangely important one, right? If they lose this game, they're 2 games below 500 heading into a series with the Yankees. You've just lost an embarrassing home series against the Colorado Rockies. The vibes would be in a very different place than they are today, getting back to 500 and securing their second straight series win. As you point out, Jose Berríos was fantastic.
That is Nick Ashmore. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and the Sportsnet app. Jays 5-0 winners over the Rockies down here at the Rogers Center. Hey, give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can certainly text us as well, 590-590, name and location. The people's text line, Nick, is always open. But Berríos, you know, I think today it exemplified in a lot of ways why I love watching Berríos pitch, because I don't know, no runs over 7 innings, you're going to take that from any starter in baseball. But also, like, his slurve, which is his best pitch, it didn't look great for large stretches today. Like, it wasn't moving as much as it normally moves, which is really to say quite a lot. Essentially, the slider did not look so great. They both looked, I don't know if heavier is the right word, but it just, again, they weren't moving as they usually do out there. But he threw this sinker a little bit more than he usually does, and that pitch, which is also one of his very good pitches, it helped him keep the batters off balance just enough for him to get back to use the slurve in more favorable counts. And he hit a few batters, like, hit, quote-unquote. I mean, like, neither of them looked, he didn't, like, bean guys, right? Like, the Jacob Stallings one was maybe a result of him wearing a jersey size that was slightly too big for him. But, again, he walked a couple guys. But generally, there wasn't a lot of traffic on the base paths. And a lot of these Rockies batters today just look like they didn't understand what to do against him for most of the day, which is great to see.
Yeah, he didn't have his best stuff today. Like, we can be honest about it. His velocity was down about a mile per hour on most of his pitches. The slurve, especially early in the game, in that first inning, it really did not feel like it was biting with good horizontal movement. And at the same time, he found a way to navigate his way through this game. More than navigate. It's not like a 5-inning outing where he had 3 runs against. Like, he dominated now. And I feel like I've said this a lot over the weekend we spent together in the booth. This was the Colorado Rockies. This was them on the road. That is a very beneficial matchup for a pitcher to have. At the same time, you can't do any better than 7 scoreless innings, and the team really needed it to secure the series. He was consistent. Once he got out of that first inning, he settled into the game. And like you said, there was not a lot of traffic from that point on.
I think for me, Nick, the most impressive inning for Berríos today is probably the fifth inning, top of the fifth inning. So he walks Montero. That's how the inning starts, right? He walks Montero. He hits, again, quote-unquote, Stallings, right, with the grazing his baggy jersey.
The gamesmanship is good, man. Like, the oversized jersey, you got to respect that.
Hey, and I think he hit Tovar, and I'm not saying he moved into the path of the baseball, but, like, it's not like he hit him square on the shoulder. He kind of, like, was swinging, kind of like Danny Jansen does sometimes, and his hands kind of moved into the path of the baseball. So, again, it's not like he had exemplified some giant lack of control today. But so he hits Stallings after he walks Montero. There are 2 on. There's nobody out. And then he strikes out Charlie Blackmon, because then now the order is turned over to the top of the order. And, again, say what you want about the Rockies hitting away from Coors Field. This is still the top of their order. He strikes out Charlie Blackmon. He strikes out Ezekiel Tovar. And then he gets McMahon after a somewhat medium-length battle there between the two of them. He gets McMahon to fly out to end the inning. Like, his ERA on the year now is 1.05. That is incredible. Like, it's probably not going to hold up, because even in Cy Young winning seasons for the best pitchers in baseball, it's usually around like 2.5 or high 2s or whatever. So almost certainly not going to hold up. But that is great to see from Berríos. And again, we know at this point in his tenure as a Blue Jay, he does not get rattled very often, and it's great to see that continue. He almost looked a little frustrated with the very few mistakes that did happen, but he didn't even let that bother him either, so that's really great to see from him.
Yeah, sure. I think you're absolutely right to zoom in on this fifth inning because he did it in a variety of ways. With Charlie Blackman, he reached back and threw a 95.2-mile-an-hour fastball, which is not a velocity
right.
he had had all day. He found that pitch in that big moment to strike him out. And then he goes to Tovar, and it's a totally different approach. He threw him exclusively slurves to get that strikeout, which I'm sure Tovar was in the on-deck circle, and he's looking, oh, okay, he's really ratcheting up the fastball, which is what he threw to Blackman at the end of that at-bat. He gets him in two different ways and then gets out of that jam. And also the jam in the first inning was a big deal as
sure.
well.
Yeah,
once
yeah.
you had that error by Alejandro Kirk, the Rockies were in a good spot to be leading this game before the Blue Jays had even swung the bats. And he was in a 2-0 count when that error happened, fought his way back, got the pop-up, and got his way out of that inning. It was also very impressive.
Yeah, Barrios had runners on second and third with, what, it was one out or two outs at the point? Yeah, one out. And, gosh, I very impressed with everything he's done all year, but Barrios continues to be someone who has, I don't want to say surprised, Nick, because, again, he's played very well. We've seen him play well over the course of a number of seasons dating back to his trade to the Blue Jays a couple of years ago. But I still think it's something that raises your eyebrows to a certain extent because of some of the struggles elsewhere on the team. But he's been great. I see a text here from Mike in Newmarket. Awesome response from the Friday game to take the series. JT has been awesome real early, but Barrios looking like a Cy Young candidate. Will be interesting to see who gets sent down with Romano and Swanson coming back. Let's beat the Yankees. Yeah, agreed, Mike. And on the Barrios looking like a Cy Young candidate, I think that the Cy Young odds are a little wonky at this time of year just because it's like a couple weeks into the season. And I typically don't even look at who is leading the odds until way later. I do like to put a couple of bets on a couple guys down. It's like one of the only things I gamble on, Nick, pretty much. But I did, finally enough, after his last start, put like $2 on Barrios to win the AL Cy Young, and he was like plus 6,600. So I'm going to guess those odds dip a little after yet another fantastic start from him today.
Yeah, I don't know if I see my role here to give gambling advice. I will say that
do you gamble often?
I've dabbled in the past. I've dabbled more or less at different times. But what I would say about Barrios is like this is still very much a dart throw. I consider Barrios to be more of a good two, which is that's what the Blue Jays are paying him to be. To be honest, they're getting good value on his contract if he's a good two.
Sure, yeah.
He's been so consistent outside of that 2022 season. That ceiling is not really there for him, I don't think, just because he's not that big-time strikeout pitcher. Like,
right.
It's very rare to see a guy win the Cy Young, kind of attain that ace status, be at the very top of the game if they don't have a little bit more swing and miss than Barrios had. And coming into this game, like he did get that today, but early in the season, that actually had been missing a little bit. He'd been relying on his fielding. And the Blue Jays are a pretty good defensive team. That's generally going to work. But I see him in a couple tiers down from the real top dogs.
Yeah, and I mean, like, you look at guys like Cole Reagans or Tarek Skubal as guys outside of the regular names like the Corbin Burns and the Kevin Gausmans of the world, right, especially in the American League. But it is fun to prognosticate when it comes to the AL Cy Young. And hey, at least for now, maybe he doesn't hold up, but for now he's at least in that conversation, even if it is only a couple starts into the year. But again, very impressed by Jose Barrios. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones, Nick. Eddie in Fort Erie joining us here on Jays Talk. Eddie, what's on your mind?
Not much, gentlemen. How's it going today?
Good. Always nice to end a weekend with a win, Eddie, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, especially against a team like Colorado. I mean, like, I know they're a bad team, but you know what? You got to do what you got to do, right? Now, I was scoring the game today, and I had my eyes on that fifth inning for the Blue Jays because I said to myself, now that Springer stole second base, I thought to myself, you know what? If Freeland gets Guerrero and Bichette, I could see them intentionally walking Turner because – number one, they know him very well from playing with the Dodgers. And number two, he already had two hits and two RBIs. And when they didn't, I was like, what are you doing? You should have known. You know who Turner is. You faced him quite a bit when he was with the Dodgers. You were still in the game and you do that? Like, come on. Like, you should know who's who with familiarity. You know what I mean? Like that was just bad managing by the Rockies, and you also wasted a mound visit too to add to that, and you know what, and so that's how you take advantage of it, and good for the Blue Jays to win that, and Barrios did great, you know.
Yeah, hey, Eddie, appreciate your call. Thanks for calling in, man. I agree on the perhaps poor managerial decisions at times from the Rockies, but at the same time, I mean, I think because to Eddie's point, Nick, Justin Turner, and you and I talked about this in the pregame show, Justin Turner right now is the Blue Jays' best hitter. And I don't really think it's that close for second place. Like, I guess second place might be, maybe it's Davis Schneider, maybe it has been Bo Bichette, maybe Bo's crept back up there for people to say he's the second best hitter. People were saying maybe it was Ernie Clement at one point, and neither Schneider or Clement played that great offensively today, but Justin Turner has been exactly as advertised for basically the entire season. Like, he is an RBI machine. Like, it is incredible. 3 runs for him today. One was a little blooper, but the other two were pretty solid hits. And you had brought up the point in the pregame show that he might actually be underappreciated, which is kind of remarkable considering that he's been, again, the team's best hitter. But again, after another terrific showing today, I almost find it hard to argue with the idea that he might be underappreciated.
Yeah, and there's a good point about familiarity there, where most of the guys on the Blue Jays roster don't know Freeland well because he spent his career with the Colorado Rockies. We don't have that much interleague play. Turner, having spent so much time in Los Angeles, knew this guy very well. He'd faced him 53 times before today's outing, and he was 16 for 46. That's a .333 batting average against him. He's got the lefty-righty. The platoon is in his favor. He's got a strong history. That's not a guarantee he's going to deliver, but he absolutely delivered there. What I would say about the intentional walk is that that's a move that managers pull out for guys they perceive to be the elite of the elite hitters.
Right.
And that's what Turner has been so far this year. Undoubtedly, you can look at his numbers. He's been an elite hitter. But I don't think that's where most people in baseball perceive the 39-year-old Justin Turner to be right now. And that could change. If he keeps producing like this, it will change. But he's not quite feared to that extent right now.
It's true. And you know what? That might change as the season continues because, again, he has been very, very consistent. And, I mean, his third run, he took a few pitches to start the AB, so he showed great patience. I think one was called strike, one was a ball. He fouls a few pitches. It's now 2-2, and he just drives one back up the middle immediately afterwards for that run. And, again, when you take out the little blooper at the very beginning of the game, both very solid hits, make great contact, a great swing, great patience as well. And I think the patience part of it for me, Nick, is something that I kind of hope, and you kind of wonder how this translates when you have a guy who's a veteran, a proven veteran like Turner on the team, but you kind of wonder how it translates to the rest of the team, like what he's saying in the clubhouse in terms of approach. And again, every hitter is their own person, and they have their own tells and their own ways of swinging and their own preferences and all these different things. But I do hope to a certain extent that beyond them getting lessons from Edwin or Victor Martinez or Guillermo Martinez or Don Mattingly or any of these guys, maybe they can even just take some of that from Justin Turner as well, because I think we are starting to see them be a little more patient. But against teams that are, you know, like the Yankees are coming to town tomorrow, you want to see them be a little more patient against the Yankees and the AL East teams and all the really good teams of the world as well, not just the Rockies.
Yeah, Justin Turner has an incredible amount of credibility in this clubhouse. You know, if I walked in tomorrow and I said, Vladdy, I'm going to need you to stop swinging at that slider away, I don't think that he would give me the time of day. But if Justin Turner had something like that to say to him, he would give it a little bit more thought. And one thing, if you talk to major league ball players, you come to realize is that one thing they respect almost as much as anything, even skill set, is longevity, service time, like guys who stick around. Because if you stick around, you make money and you get respect in this game. And so when someone has been in the major leagues for so long, their words will carry weight. Does that mean that Turner is going to have instruction for every hitter in the Blue Jays lineup and he's going to fix all their flaws? Absolutely not. But he's someone who will be respected and does have wisdom to impart, especially in a game like this, for instance, where the rest of the lineup hasn't faced the pitcher. He's faced them many, many times. Yeah. I'm sure that there were discussions before the game about how to attack the Rocky southpaw here because Turner was the one who knew.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the ways to call in, if you so choose, 590-590. That's the People's Text line. Leave your name and location, and we'll get to your text. Actually, let's read a couple of these texts here, Nick. Read a couple earlier. David from Dartmouth. I like this text from David. He says, good hitters create their own luck, and JT is a good hitter. Case closed. All right, that's a pretty simple one. Claudio from King City. Couple of questions. Why does Turner always have that black stain across his name, and seems like attendance hasn't been great, considering First Home Sent, all the renovations? Your thoughts. Thank you. So, okay, and the attendance thing at the very least, I don't know about you. I don't really think like it's ever been that packed here, even before the renovations, like in April, early April. I think it's just like that's just a part of the season. Like I was seeing clips from all over baseball, and like I don't know, well, even with I think a holiday incoming in the States, it wasn't that busy in like Fenway or New York or different places. So I don't know. I don't think the attendance stuff is really a huge issue. But on the on Turner's black stain, it's because he slathers the bat in pine tar, and if you watch him, what he does, he kind of rests it over his shoulder when he's waiting in the on deck circle, and then that's kind of what makes that stain. So it's pine tar. I wonder if it comes out. I wonder if the clubhouse attendants managed to get it out, or if they're just giving them new jerseys every single day, maybe. But that's what Nick, at least for Claudio, causes the pine tar stain.
Yeah, I think one of the benefits of being a famous professional athlete making eight figures is you don't really concern yourself with laundry too much.
Right.
And that's where Justin Turner is in his career. He really does not have to consider what's happening to his jersey.
I see a text here from Jen in Toronto. Thanks for the text, Jen. Jen says, hey, guys, fun game. Will Jays send Pearson down when Romano and Swanson come up? Pearson has looked very good this year. I don't care about options. Thanks. And then Bryn from Hamilton, kind of a similar question. Has Nate Pearson earned more real leverage? I think it's a valid question because through the first, 16 games of the season now, they're 8-8 on the year. I think the Blue Jays have gotten some quality outings from Nate Pearson, including today. Like, he disposed of Elias Diaz, Nolan Jones, and Brenton Doyle all pretty easily. He dialed up, I know it wasn't a strike, but he dialed up the fastball to 102.3 miles an hour. And he was, I think, the most important thing, Nick, was that Pearson was locating those strikes today, which is not something he has done super consistently, right? Like, that's always been kind of the bugaboo with Pearson. And I'll give him all the credit in the world for staying consistent so far. And I'll tell you this, we did see Romano. He was signing autographs down the third base line before the game started. Swanson was seen in the clubhouse. Manoah was here as well. So all those guys are here. I don't think Manoah is that close to coming back, but obviously with Romano and Swanson not doing any more rehab appearances as relievers, I think he could pretty safe to say, even if they don't get activated tomorrow, they will play in the next couple days, more than likely. If they come up, is it Nate Pearson getting the hook and getting sent back to Buffalo? Because he's pitched pretty well. He's made that a tough conversation, I think, for Atkins and Schneider.
For sure. He's pitched fantastic. I thought he was electric today. I mean, the stuff was enhanced over what we've seen before, and you know his baseline is already very high, but he's got above average movement on both his breaking balls and then the heater, as you mentioned, going well over 100 miles per hour.
Filthy.
I like the way he pitched to Diaz, where he pitched him backwards. He started sliders, curveball, and then he used the fastball as the strikeout pitch. And the other hitters, he's like, oh wait, I've got the fastball, and he just started coming after him. Like, you could kind of see that level of him almost toying with his opposition. So it is hard to send down a pitcher of that caliber. The issue comes in with what is the alternative, right? You're keeping Green, you're keeping Garcia,
yep.
You're keeping Cabrera and Richards. You're not sending down Meza, even though he's been a little bit up and down. So, like, Bowden Francis.
You could send down Francis.
Francis
instead.
Is a good candidate because you could use Mitch White to do most of the things you do with Francis. But that's, then you still have one more guy if you're bringing up Romano and Swanson. And so you kind of believe that that person's going to be Pearson, but it is tough to dispatch a pitcher who has looked so good at the major league level down to AAA.
And Cabrera doesn't have options, right? I don't. Maybe he does. Maybe
Cabrera does have one option,
okay.
So that, I guess, is a possibility,
but
with Meza
lefty,
not being as strong early in the year, that's a tough move to make.
I don't think I would send down Pearson right now. Honestly, like I really don't think I would, because I think he has earned at least slightly higher leverage appearances. And they might have to do some manipulations of the roster here a little bit, where you send him down and then he comes back up, or you know, because I think once you get sent down, you have to stay down for a certain amount of time. So it might depend on what they think might be needed as soon as possible, like in the next couple of weeks, like in the next 2 weeks ish, right? You got the Yankees in town, you got the Padres in town, if you just look forward a week from now. So that's a really tough question. I would keep Pearson personally. I honestly think I would. I think he has earned, I'm not saying he has earned, if we're talking about the circle of trust, which you know I love, Nick, I don't think I would put Pearson in higher leverage situations than any of Richards, Garcia, or Green, but he probably deserves a chance to pitch in those medium leverage situations, which maybe would be, and you mentioned this yesterday, maybe would be a spot Francis would come out in anyways, right? Like if Yariel Rodriguez comes out and you don't have Francis to go to, like you said, you go to Mitch White, or you go to Nate Pearson. He's been asked to get you more than three outs at a time sometimes as well.
Yeah, he could also come in for those early situations in the game where it's the fourth or fifth and your starter's in a lot of trouble men on base and you need that strikeout. He's someone who has that skill set. Yeah, I think to make it happen, you got to send down Francis and then one of the lefties. And I don't think it's necessarily crazy. Like neither of the lefties, I know Cabrera was good in this game. Neither of them have been fantastic early. Maybe with Tim Mesa, if you think that giving him that break might be able to help him get his velocity back, that's something you could think of if there's something physical there. It is really tough to say, Nate Pearson, pack your bags. We want you to ride some buses. I know you're throwing 102 and you haven't given up any runs.
The amazing thing, too, I feel like the reason he's not going to get sent down, in addition to him being one of the longer tenured players on the team, is also, Nick, because we saw the situation in which they used him yesterday, and it's not like they used him against like the bottom of the order. They asked him to get 1, 2, and 3 in the order, which I feel like still indicates that he still has a large measure of this coaching staff's trust, essentially. You know what I mean? Like, if it was the other way, if they were just like, oh, okay, Mesa, go out and like get rid of the 7, 8, 9 batters. And I know that the situation yesterday's game kind of dictated how they were used because Garcia came out for 7, 8, 9, but that was also in the ninth inning. So I understand how that works. But at the same time, I just feel like he's been on the team for long enough that he probably won't get that ask made of him. And that really does narrow the possibilities for who could get sent down. And because you're right, I think France is a good candidate, but he's only one of two guys if you want both Romano and Swanson to pitch against the Yankees.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to put your tinfoil hat on for a second here,
I'm always ready for that.
Might be that somebody comes down with a little bit of a neck strain in the next couple of days and just finds himself just waking up out of bed, feeling slightly wrong with right. that neck, and needs to spend some time on the IL.
I mean, it wouldn't be the first time we have seen a phantom IL stint, so it probably would never be the last. But Nate Pearson making some conversations difficult in the Blue Jays clubhouse in a good way, which is not something we've been able to always say about Big Nate in the last couple of years. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We're here until the top of the hour, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. Those are the ways to reach us. We're going to step aside. When we come back, we'll hear from the skipper, who just finished wrapping up his media availability, and we'll certainly chat about the offense as well in a 5-0 win for the Blue Jays over the Rockies. Sho and Nick are with you. You're listening to Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
I think he's just attacking more. You know, there were some close pitches today, too, that were kind of just off, to his glove side. And he just didn't – he was kind of relentless with it. He just kind of kept pounding the zone. But I think when you've kind of been through those situations before, he pitched out of trouble early his last start, or in the fourth inning, whatever it was. But I think just knowing that you can do it and you've done it just gives you a little bit of, a little extra confidence to do it again. And today was another example.
Zay Berríos, 7 innings of no-run baseball and a 5-0 Blue Jays win over the Rockies. They win their second straight game, they win their second straight series, and they will welcome in the Yankees to the Rogers Center tomorrow. You're listening to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network, on Sportsnet.ca, and on the Sportsnet app. Sho and Nick here with you until the top of the hour. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line, and the text line is always open. Let's go to the phones. Nick, Joe joining us from Mississauga. Joe, how's it going? What's on your mind today?
Hey, good afternoon. Another good game today. Yeah, just looking at Justin Turner right from the beginning of this season. When he stands up to bat, he just looks like he has a presence. It looks like he's going to do the damage when it counts. And really, we haven't seen too many lineups in the past 2 years that just look like that. I mean, you go back to the times of Donaldson and Batista and Edwin, you knew they were going to do damage. They just gave you good at-bats when it mattered. Even go back to Alomar, Carter, and Olerud and Molitor days. And this is, I guess, what we want from Vladdy that we're not getting. Bichette provides a little bit of it. Vladdy, I don't know if he's going to get it, but if he ever did, that's what you want in a dominant hitter, especially with two outs.
Hey, Joe, appreciate the call, man. Thanks for joining us here. I think it's true. It's nice to see, when it comes to roster construction, Nick, the threat that JT brings to this offense, because it's not something the team had last year, it kind of felt like, right? And last year they experimented with that cleanup spot. It felt like all year, essentially. And, yeah, I mean, if you had, I don't know, Teoscar Hernandez on this team still, would he maybe be the DH, the cleanup spot hitter? If you didn't have Justin Turner, maybe. And that's probably, as Blair's talked about before, maybe one of the spots you'd wish you could have a little bit of a do-over on. But, boy, I mean, Justin Turner has been exactly as advertised. It's hard to argue too much with what he's doing. Again, patient ABs, patient approach. He never really seems to get too flustered. I like that about him. He has a very a low resting heart rate, it would seem, whenever he's at the plate.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure to watch hitters who control the strike zone. Like Jose Bautista was a great example of that. When you watch a Jose Bautista bat, you did not think he was going to flail at something outside right. The zone. You felt like he was going to force the pitchers into places where he could do damage. Now, did it always work out? No, of course not. You know, like no one hits 500 in baseball. He hit pop-ups. He didn't always succeed. But when you're watching the game, it is definitely a joy to see someone who you watch them play that cat and mouse game well and bring the pitcher to them. Turner is absolutely one of those guys. Now, I think the kind of flaw with Turner as a like your cleanup guy, and it's hard to talk about his flaws right now because he's been so successful, but in theory, if there is a flaw, it's that his high-end power to do that damage is maybe not as high as some of the traditional cleanup guys you're going to see. Like he doesn't have that huge level of power, and that's fine because, you know, he's hitting doubles all over the park, he's getting on base, no complaints about what he's done thus far. But that can be the trade-off, because sometimes the guys with the huge amount of power are a little bit more wild, like Teoscar Hernandez, as you brought up. He could be a bit wild at the plate sometimes, but the power was there. Yeah. And mentioning Vladdy, in theory, he's supposed to marry those two concepts. And we saw it in 2021. That's what he did. He was very patient, and he had that kind of explosive power. And he has not been able to find that balance since in that same way. Bo Bichette is never going to be like that. That's not him. He doesn't really control the strikes in the same way, but he can hit just about anything, so it's fine. But I understand kind of stylistically why fans are really going to like Turner, because every pitch he seems in control of the at-bat.
I see a text here from Alden in Scarborough. Man, it feels good to have a real cleanup hitter, which I'm sure is a sentiment echoed by many Blue Jays fans, Nick. I see a text here from, I actually just lost it. Where is it? Here it is. Andrew from Kitchener. So Andrew on Vladdy. Does Vladdy realize that fans are done with his childish antics and is batting under 200, jumping and dancing around, ice bath, not hustling out of the box, all that needs to end, act like a grown-up? So, okay, I agree on the hustling out of the box thing. I would like to see him hustle more out of the box all the time. Just do it all the time. And then no one will have an issue with it. You just run out of the box every single time, unless it's like a grounder right to the first baseman, which happens sometimes. That I don't have an issue with. But when balls get knocked out and it ends up being a close play at first because he's not hustling out of the box, yeah, that does irk me a little bit. I admit I do not care about the jumping and dancing around, the ice bath stuff. It's like a complete non-entity, non-factor to me, Nick. I don't know how you feel about it, but I just like it. It doesn't even exist in something I consider, because it has no material effect on how you play baseball. Like him dumping an ice bath on Justin Turner doesn't change how he's swinging the bat, for better or for worse.
Yeah, I've never seen someone do a dance in the dugout and then immediately swing at four splitters in the dirt.
Right.
Like it's just, those things aren't necessarily related to each other. And the thing with Vladdy is, like, this is clearly his personality. He's been up with the team for years. So when things are going well for him, people say, wow, he's so fun. He brings an incredible vibe to this team. This team's so fun to watch. And then suddenly when things aren't going as well, people want to make these criticisms. And I get that to an extent, but realistically, his personality is not going to change. His results may change, and therefore our perception of him could change. But I don't think that's necessarily fair, because he is going to be the human being he is. And to be honest, if he was showing no life whatsoever and looked miserable in the dugout staring into the void, yeah, it would be hard to say, oh, that's a positive thing that's happened for his mental state.
Yeah, no, I truly don't care. I just don't care about that stuff. It matters. It doesn't even matter at all, because it's not relevant, right? I wanted to talk a little bit with you about Alejandro Kirk, because that's someone I targeted with you in the last couple of times we've been on the pregame shows, and we did Jay's Talk yesterday, and someone I think we've all, and I say we, including you and I, and certainly people who are listening and texting in, you know, we're a little concerned about how the year had gone, a relatively slow start. And offensively today, two walks and two singles for Kirk. Poor decision in the first inning to throw up the right field line away from Vladdy, who was trying to move to the bag. He was trying to get the tag down the ball. It was a bad throw. Let's just face it. It was a terrible throw. Maybe a bad decision. But on offensively, I like the patience from Kirk today. I got to say, like, the two walks coming on, I think both on 3-2 counts as well. So good takes from him both times, and both just overall in those ABs, because he really had to battle after different points. But the takes have never really been the huge problem. It's always been kind of the swings, and he still has no home runs on the season, but it's good to see his eye and his patience remain amidst a very tough start to the year. But I do hope the two walks and two singles can, even if it is against the Rockies, I do kind of hope if that's perhaps something he can use to build on, because you got to feel a little good about yourself after that.
I feel like I've become a caricature of myself because you chose to include the caveat about the Rockies. I actually wasn't going there. This time I was not going to mention how bad the Rockies were. With Kirk with the two singles and two walks, it's a productive day. It's a good step forward. That's sort of the baseline for him. We know his skill set. He is patient. He should be able to put the bat on the ball and get singles. So the fact that he's doing that and he's becoming, you know, the kind of productive-ish version from 2023, that's good. But what you really need to see from him is him putting any kind of charge into the ball. And until he does that, I'm not even talking home runs. I'm talking a double.
Right.
Until he gives me, you know, a nice swing, an opposite field double, or yanking it down the line on, you know, in the air, that's when I'd start to get a little bit more excited about what he's doing. Like, what he did today felt like a good iteration of the flawed Kirk we've seen recently, and that's good news. The Blue Jays will take that. Again, it was a productive day, but in terms of his development, where you want him to be, where he's kind of sharing time with Danny Jansen, he's someone you want in the lineup consistently, that person is someone who's giving you a little bit from an extra base hit perspective.
And Kirk was batting seventh today, and as long as he's struggling like this, and again, today was a good day, that's probably, like, generally speaking, where you want him. Like, I kind of liked, even, and again, David Schneider and Ernie Clement didn't have great days. I don't think either of them drove in any
Clement
runs.
Clement had a couple hits.
That's true. He drove in a couple hits. Neither of them had any runs, and I think they both struck out a couple times, or Schneider did, Clement once, I believe. But when you look at where Kirk is in the order, I like that place for him. And I do wonder if the relatively imminent return of Danny Jansen is going to change things a little bit, just to give him a breather, right? Because, again, like, if you're replacing Kirk with Servin, and it's not any slight against Servin, but it's not going to be the same thing as replacing Kirk with Danny Jansen, based on the power we've seen from Jansen and his similar ability to control the, you know, pitch framing and control the zone and so on as a catcher itself and calling games and so on. So I hope that happens soon. This is actually the quote from John Schneider from his media availability just a couple of minutes ago. So he was asked if they were going to activate Jansen, Romano, Swanson tomorrow, and he said, not 100% positive. Jano played today in Buffalo, and I think the Bisons, last I checked, they're up like 12-0. So I don't know how much Jansen actually played, but apparently he did feel good, and they're going to see how they all feel tomorrow morning. You got to think that Jano's probably, if he played today, he might not play tomorrow. Just give him a bit of a day off after he played this whole series against Rochester. But if he does come back, maybe if he's going to get activated against the Yankees on Tuesday, that might be a good time. And it's not terrible to give Kirk another day, just because day game and then night game tomorrow, there's a bit more lead time for him to get right a little bit.
Yeah, and when Jansen comes back, it's not necessarily going to be, okay, Jansen is the starting catcher now because Kirk is struggling and Kirk is the backup. Like, as long as we have been in this era of juggling these two catchers, for even when Kirk struggled last year, he was still a starting caliber MLB catcher. You'll see some component of mixing and matching for matchups, some aspect of platooning. Like, it's going to be more of a 60-40, but if Kirk continues to struggle like this, or maybe not as dramatically as he had early, he might open the door to a little bit of a new arrangement with them where Jansen's the primary guy, especially if Jansen comes back and hits well and he's in a contract year, he's trying to make that money. We've seen guys perform well in those type of situations. Like, their relationship in terms of playing time could change if Kirk can't raise his level.
Before we go here, Nick, we got a couple minutes left here. Any thoughts on IKF? We didn't talk about a lot about IKF yesterday, but again, he just loves hitting at the dome, I guess. Like, he had an okay, middling road trip when the Blue Jays went 4-6, and he is featured, I would say, pretty heavily in the homestand. I mean, he did his first home run during the homestand, and while we probably won't see that a whole ton, he's made, I thought, pretty good plays on defense. He's played at third, he's played at second. He's a guy who, well, we know is a super utility guy, and again, putting some real nice swings on the baseball. And again, even with the caveat about the Rockies, he did the same thing against the Mariners. So I got to say, I've been pretty impressed. I'm curious what he'll have against the Yankees, because you got to imagine, as long as he's swinging the bat this well, he's probably going to get a little bit more playing time.
Yeah, because he has both defensive utility and defensive quality wherever he plays. The baseline for his offense does not have to be that high for him to be an effective player. And so you have this little homestand here where he's hitting the ball really well, and then you get his defense on top of that. It's like, this is a very effective ball player. Do we have confidence that that will continue? I'm not so sure about that. I think his career has been fairly long at this point. We know he's been a below-average offensive player pretty much all the way through.
Right.
So he's got to show a lot for me to say, oh, he's turned the corner, he's a new guy. What I will say is, when he is going, and he seems to be going right now, that is a very nice package. You see that with any defensive player who plays the game at a really high level in the field. You don't need as much offense from them, so when they give you that offense, it's like, wow, this is a big two-way presence.
Yeah, I've liked what I've seen from IKF, maybe more than I expected at this point in the season. And again, I think he's hitting in the right spot. He's batting eighth today, so maybe on days where Kiermaier's not playing and Varsho's in there, you can still keep him out there in the infield somewhere. He's someone who can play the outfield if you need to, but I don't expect we see that a whole ton. So, you know, if you need to keep on cycling between Davis Schneider and Ernie Clement and IKF at different points in between second and third, I think you'd feel pretty okay about it, especially based on all of their play today. Before we go, your expectations for Yankees series, Nick?
It's a big series. I think this is when you have the biggest test, because before you're on the road against great teams, then you're at home against teams that were struggling. Now you're at home against a really good team. Two wins would be enormous for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, can't wait to see it. Always fun to be able to test your stuff against the best teams in baseball. The Yankees coming to town tomorrow for the first of three. That's Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. Appreciate you being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by your local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Glovertown and Clarenville, Newfoundland. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local family-owned Crown at crown.com. Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick, for Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Tristan Marcagiani, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. Blair and Barker have you covered for the Yankees series. I'm back for some late night editions starting on Friday with the Jays in Slam Diego. So please stay up and give me some texts and some calls next weekend, because I think we'll need it when it's that late out on the West Coast. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you next week.